coming to this conversation. Ups and downs, happy or sad. Does one simply choose to believe? Can someone actually believe in this? Welcome to Innocent or Ignorant.
All right, good morning, guys. We're joined in studio with a special guest today. He is known as John Doe, and he is joining us from the Appalachian Mountains in the hills of North Carolina. We're going to talk today about his experience with Bigfoot and Sasquatch. John, thanks a lot for agreeing to do this. We're really glad to hear from you. We had a snafu with our last guest that was a Sasquatch hunter in the Pacific Northwest. You know, had some real life stuff come up, so he had to cancel on us. So I appreciate you stepping in, man. I just want to hear what your story is and then what your experiences with the Bigfoot Sasquatch is.
Sure. Would you like me to start with my first major encounter?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, my first major encounter started last year on August 2nd. I'd had some minor encounters before that, but didn't know what I was experiencing. There were attempts at communication from the Sasquatches to me, and basically what happened is I was going to an area that I'd been going to for about 2 or 3 years to go watch for UFOs and other light anomalies, and the area was just haunted anyways. I'm a witch, so I'm naturally drawn to those types of things. What's kind of strange is that I'd go out there and I really wouldn't have a lot of experiences for hours. I mean, I would have experiences there, but you know, the experiences, a lot of times paranormal experiences last just a few seconds and then they're over. And then it's just the memory and the excitement that carries it. Go out there looking for UFOs or, you know, light anomaly activity or whatever. And I had seen quite a few UFOs with witnesses out there. But after a while, I just got to where I enjoyed spending time out there. I thought to myself, you know, I'd rather be sitting out here than sitting at home watching TV or on the computer. I'm the kind of person, I'm very philosophical, and I'm a writer and a songwriter and so on, and I like to sit with my own thoughts a lot. So I'd sit out there for hours at a time, just relaxing, chilling out. I'd gone out there one night. It was August 2nd. It was the night before full moon, 2020. And I got there about 9:40 p.m., I don't remember. I guess I was a little bored looking for a little bit more excitement or something that night. And people had told me there was a Sasquatch there. I'd had some kind of encounters up until this point. I didn't know it was with a Sasquatch, which I assume is what it was at this now. I had a piece of wood and I hit a signpost a couple of times just to see if anything would happen. Within 20 minutes, something started just kind of going crazy. There was, just so you know, I'm off of a pull-off on a scenic highway. I'm at an overlook. Whatever it was started going nuts up on an embankment. This went on for 45 minutes. It scared me. So, and I do not scare easily. I've dealt with a lot of crazy paranormal stuff in my life. I mean, things that even some of the most skilled, some of the biggest psychics you see on TV or whatever, probably not experienced. I'm parking, watching for these light anomalies. This thing starts going crazy on the embankment behind me. Being a singer, I can project my voice and so on. I typically expect to be able to yell or something to make any wild animal go away, you know, especially from a distance. So I ended up turning my car around. I was so scared and facing the embankment instead of the overlook, terrified. Whether or not the presence itself would have scared me because I didn't know what was going on and I wasn't sure how to react to it. I was aware of pretty much every moment in that situation. And even to this day, I have a very good memory of the whole situation. I was even checking my clock on my cell phone, you know, to see what time it was, to see how long this was taking place. I was taking notes, you know, mental notes anyway. But I had turned my car around to face the embankment, and I had a flashlight, and I was shining on the embankment. I had that in my left hand. I had my car keys in my right hand, and everything in my body was telling me to leave. In my mind, something in my, and I'm used, like I said, I've dealt with paranormal issues before, and I've dealt with the fight or flight. And sometimes you got to sit there and get through that fight or flight part before you can make the actual decisions that are going to pay off in the long run. I could have left that night. I might not have been so comfortable coming back, and they may not have been happy with me coming back, but I didn't leave that night. I toughed it out. I stood my ground. This thing stayed in the trees, and I'd say it was within 100 yards of me, but of course on the further, you know, 75 to 100 yards away from me, the further end of that.
Right.
And I did feel, though, whatever it was big enough and powerful enough that if it wanted to come charging at me from that distance out down off that ridge, that it could probably get to me before I get in my car and definitely do some damage to my vehicle either way, you know. It definitely, it was big and frightening. Whatever it was, I was thinking, this has got to be 400 pounds plus. I'm freaking out here. What I did was, I did the only thing I needed to do, because once I knew, I realized I wasn't dealing with a regular animal. What happened is, every time I'd yell, it would escalate. So it would meet my escalations, where typically a normal animal, having been out in the woods off and on all of my life, you know, I know that a normal animal, unless it's, you know, like a pack of coyotes or something like that, you can usually holler at them and scare them away for the most part. Bears, you know, they don't like a lot of loud noises. If they're very habituated to humans, it may take a little bit more. I was way out in the woods. There's no houses around. It's actually national park land. So I did the only thing I knew to do, and I started singing to it. I sang three songs, and it got quiet while I was singing. As soon as I stopped singing, it started getting rowdy again. At this point, I'm like, okay, I'm either going to leave or I'm going to tell this creature like it is, and it's either going to run me out of here or I'm going to get to stay. And I gave it a testimony and said, look, I am not your enemy. I'm your friend. I said, I don't have any weapons. I said, please don't run me out of my favorite place. And then it stayed quiet. It was quiet while I was talking, and then it was for about two or three more minutes, and then I heard two loud, distinct tree knocks. And that's when I said, okay, this is a Bigfoot. You know, that's like, I'm not arguing with myself over this anymore.
Do you feel like your confidence and your presence there kind of kept you, because, you know, they say a lot of animals can sense fear.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that your projecting that and then even singing to it obviously probably was odd. I'm pretty sure it's never heard someone. Usually it's probably used to intimidating people, and then as soon as you started singing to it, it was like, okay, this is different.
Yeah, well, from what I understand, indigenous people used to sing to them when they would walk through their territories and know they were going through their territories, and that would help. It would always make a difference. They let them pass because they know that we're just here to collect berries and move on or whatever, and it, you know, and it wasn't a big deal to them, I think. That's from what I understand from stories I've heard. Honestly, I believe this was a juvenile, first of all, a good-sized juvenile, probably between 200 and 325 pounds is what I'm going to guess at this point, just because I've had contact with him since. That, when it first happened, I would have said, oh, man, this thing was huge, you know, because it was just going crazy on the ridgeline. I think it wanted to make contact with me because it had already tried several times. And at this point, it decided it was going to make contact, but it needed to establish dominance first in order to feel safe and secure around me, or to let me know, you know, hey, I'm in control here, but I want to make contact with you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating. Everything that you're describing is really intelligent behavior.
That's what I was going to say, is that everything I do is behavioral. I'm not somebody that's setting out to prove that Bigfoot exists to anyone. I'm waiting until somebody else proves it, and then I'll be miles ahead in the behavioral research. So for me, what this is all about. I don't live to prove anything. I live to share things. I experience these things on a regular basis now, and I'll share it with people. You know, if people want to accept it, that's fine. If they don't, that's okay too. It's not going to hurt me one way or another. And somebody's belief in it, even if it's the, you know, greatest primatologist in the world, whether they believe me or not, it's not going to change the fact that I'm having experiences nightly, and I'm not mentally ill or not having any issues like that. You know, these are actual physical things that are happening, and I have witnesses. I decided at that point that I was not going to tell people that I'd encountered a Sasquatch. I decided that I was going to let it come out of other people's mouths first, and I was just going to say, I don't know what it was. And wait and see what they
do. Have other people come forward in from this area? Because, I mean, you did mention that other people have said there's a Sasquatch in the area, yes. But has anyone directly said, hey, this... Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. So check this out. I called a wildlife specialist the next day with the local park service. It took a few days. They had to get to him, and then it took a few days for him to call me back. And I talked to him for 15 minutes. I told him about my encounter, just like I'm talking to you. I was very clear. I wasn't overly excited or anything. We went down the list of all known animals in the area, and he said none of these animals would do this. He said any animal would have charged you or gotten out of there within 10 minutes. It's just not going to happen. A bear might linger a little bit, but if you're making a lot of noise, and they're not used to that, more than likely they're going to head on. He said a bear's not going to bluff charge you for 45 minutes. That's just not going to happen. This thing bluff charged me from about 10 p.m. I said, like I said, I got there at 9:40. I did my tree knock a little bit later than that. It would have been about 9:50, 9:55. And then the encounter started about 10 p.m. And then the creature started calming down around 10:45 is when I sang to it. And then it started up, you know, after I sang for about 10 minutes, that's when it started up again for about, I don't know, it might have just lasted a minute or two before I said, hey, I just kind of lost it. I'm like, look, I ain't your enemy. And then it was quiet. It was quiet for 2 or 3 minutes, and it was a two tree knock. So I explained everything to the wildlife specialist, and he said, I've had panther reports before, but I've never had a Bigfoot report before. That's what came out of his mouth. And that's when I said, I didn't say Bigfoot, you did. That right there for me was strong enough. And the fact that so many people had told me, hey, there's a Sasquatch here, there's a Sasquatch here. I've met a lot of people there, you know, just to look at the lights. This place is known for light anomalies. There's even another place 2 hours away that's like known worldwide for its light anomalies, UFO activity and Sasquatch activity. This place is a little bit lesser known, near a reservation, local reservation. I did later meet a girl there who I've become really good friends with. She's validated 4 of the families that I've come in contact with. I've since come in contact with 7 families since August 2nd, 2020, last year.
As you come into their territory, do you think that they recognize you now by like smell or your voice?
I think they're related and they're telepathic. And the truth is, okay. That is somewhat known about most animals. It's like, you know, kind of like animals, you've heard the herd mentality. I mean, it's just been recorded in their behavior and so on. I can't give any clear examples of that right now in this immediate moment, but I'm sure if we went online and looked it up and stuff, we could find behavioral examples of how animals seem to communicate telepathically. I think dolphins are known for that. And how many people come in and say, I feel like my dog or my cat knows what I'm thinking.
Right.
I also believe at this point, I communicate with them telepathically. I don't think a lot of misunderstandings happen between us. I try to use a lot of images as much as possible, and I think they just tend to understand my tone and my energy, because you got to understand, humans have become disconnected from everything. They haven't. We're all TV and, you know, our cell phones, our laptops, you know, social media. We don't get out in the woods anymore and just get quiet. And I mean like at night. And I mean like quiet. I don't mean like going out to party. I mean like going out and to listen to the woods, to let the trees talk to you, to let the air speak to you. You know, we don't do that anymore as humans. And they've been doing that all this time. And so that may allow them some level of empathy that we don't have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that you're projecting that imagery to them as a form of communication. Do you ever feel like they're doing the same back in your direction as well?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I'm taking primatology and conservation, and I also am a horticulturist, and I've been working these mountains for 30 years. So I know if I find a tree structure, I know what I'm finding. You know, I'm not just looking at, you know, branches tangled up in vines and saying, oh, well, that's a tree structure.
Right.
I know what I'm looking at because I know the physics of trees and why they fall. I can look at a tree and pretty much tell you, not to specific terms, but tell you, you know, if a disease or a boar, you know, a pest made it fall or whatever, if it was pushed over. Now, I'm taking primatology and conservation. That's just a 30-hour course, but it is with one of the world's leading primatologists.
So you are aware of the markings and the signs of the wildlife locally. When you're encountering the territory of these Sasquatch, are you now able to tell when it's them versus when it's a different member?
And the thing is that I actually have encounters first, and then I go back and then find the tree structure. But it has gotten to a point where, you know, I could go into an area and see the tree structure and said, oh, there might be something here. But I like to use both the tree structures and the encounters, the recorded audio encounters, to validate that they are there. Does that make sense?
You know, yeah, absolutely.
I'm not just looking at one thing and going, okay, well, you know, unless it's terribly obvious, you know, but sometimes humans can mimic tree structures to a certain degree. So, you know, you want to be careful of that going into a new area. But if I've already had an encounter in an area, then it doesn't. It's not a problem. And what I was getting to earlier was that, yes, I do go into areas now. 1, 2, 3, 4, families have let me know they were there before I knew they were there. One of them, nice. I could have sent you the audio because the knock is just clear as day in the middle of night. Family number two, I went up to, I couldn't get to family number one because of the conditions of the road, because the winter had changed the conditions of the road. And family number two, I just went to a large rock on the side of the scenic highway. It's the same scenic highway, but it was a part I could reach. I was bored because I guess I was going through Sasquatch withdrawals because I'd been visiting with family number one for so long, you know, from August 2 till November 1st. I'd been visiting with them almost every night. First 2 weeks, I didn't go out there much, but then after that, I started going out almost every night and recording conversations with them, and they would throw things at me to talk to. So, I couldn't get to them once that part of the road closed. So I went to another part of the road, and there's just a huge rock on the side of the road, and I just went over there. I thought, well, maybe I'll get some spirit voices or something. So I went over there, and I am seeing some energy, seeing some things, you know, some orbs and things, you know, behind the rock and just sitting there talking. And you hear me talking on the recorder, and I'm just like, I can see your energy. Can you talk to me? Blah, blah, blah. 9 minutes in, I get the loudest power knock I ever got on any recording. And I've got, now I'm well over 500 recordings at this point that last anywhere from 20 minutes to 6 hours. I didn't believe it at the time. I was like, no, first thing that comes out of my mouth is like, what was that? No, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to pull over here and there's Sasquatch family here. Throughout the recording, I didn't believe it. I heard three more knocks. The recording lasted 33 minutes because I wanted to go somewhere else and check and see if there was a family down the road, just somewhere I'd had a hunch. Which I later did find a family, but it wasn't until past May, I think. I took the recording, and I went home, and I listened to it, and there's 8 knocks total in the recording. And I'd say like 5 or 6 of them were responses to me talking. And there's also, at the beginning of the recording, 1 minute and 53 seconds in, I'm standing in the middle of the parking lot before I get to the rock, and there's this, like a whoosh sound, but it's a voice. And it almost sounds kind of Sasquatchy, and I'm like, man, that's got to be a Sasquatch voice when I go back and listen to it. At the time, you just hear me say, I just heard something moving around me. But it doesn't sound like that on the recording. It sounds like a spirit voice or something. And then, you know, nine minutes later into the recording, I'm getting the whack. I sent it to a researcher friend in eastern part of the state, and he said that whatever made that sound was within 50 yards of me. And after going back, I realized that whatever made that sound was probably a large rock thrown against the other side of the giant rock that I was behind. And I did go back on Black Friday, and I had to climb a lot of bluffs, and it was pretty dangerous. And I wish I would have had a friend because I could have climbed higher. And there was an amazing view up there. I was roughly at about 5,000 feet at this point. Or climbed to about 5,000 feet and could see everything around me down below. Cars look like ants. And I'm scared of heights, which is always fun. There were several tree structures that I got pictures of. So there was probably about 4 or 5 of the large X's that are seen around. There's one tree structure that I'd never seen before. I can't really explain it to you. I just have to show it to you.
Obviously, the knocks towards you, do they feel more like they're just trying to communicate with you, or are these threatening, and are you hearing some sort of dialect between them, or do they kind of hush towards each other when you're in their presence, or have you heard them talk to each other?
Everything. They do everything. Yeah. Sometimes they're like, they have the personality of cats, of a house cat. Sometimes they want you to pet them, and sometimes they want you to go away. You know, or they want to walk away. I mean, they really do. When I was first, after that part of the scenic highway had opened back up, and I went to go visit family number one, there wasn't much foliage on the trees. They weren't coming up very close, and they weren't talking much. And one of the first things that got a noise from me on recorder, after having, you know, not being able to see them all winter, not being able to visit them for 5 months, was I went up there one night, and I'd had Chinese, and I had gas terribly. I'd been trying to hold it in, and because I didn't want to fart on recorder, but I'm not pausing the recorder for a fart, because if I get a noise, that's what I'm there for, you know? I held it in, and I let it rip, and about, I don't know, was it 5 seconds later, there was a whoop, and then a knock. And I'm like, oh my, I mean, they're not real loud. They were from a good distance away, but there was a whoop and a knock. And I'm like, is that what it takes to get you guys to communicate with me sometimes?
But now, did they respond with their own flatulence, or did they just the knock?
No, but I do have a story about that, as you can imagine. My friend who did validate that family and many other families up there with me, one night we were up there, and it kept sounding like one of us had gastrointestinal issues going on, but neither one of us would lay claim to it. And it sounded like it was right in between us. And I mean, but both of us are honest people. You know, if it's me, I'm going to say it's me. You better stand away or, you know, whatever. But it just sounded like somebody's stomach was growling right in between us the entire time. She'll tell you the same thing. It went on for a good 30 minutes, and I know I got it on recorder somewhere. It's buried in there. I don't know how to explain it.
Is that you?
Yeah. I don't have the real scary Bigfoot stories. I have the funny ones, the more touching ones, bonding with the creatures instead of just, oh, I got nearly killed by a Bigfoot because I walked into the forest without announcing myself or whatever people do that's so dumb every time it triggers them. But I mean, they're just, they're a lot like normal primates as far as, I know they're not normal primates. I want to be clear about that. There are obviously weird things that go on around them that are that do not have anything to do with the gorillas and orangutans and chimpanzees and most humans that we know. Although I do know some humans with some funny lights around them. The initial communication begins with known classified primate communication. Knocks, whoops, and things thrown and understanding what it means. I have a recording I could have sent to you, and it's very clear. They pushed over a tree when I was up there one night. I got that on recording. It took me a few minutes later to figure out that I just peed right in front of them 2 minutes before because it was so foggy up there, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. And I didn't want to walk too far away from the car, you know, and risk a wild animal or something coming at me. And to be clear, I never worry about the Sasquatches hurting me. If I were to go into a new area and start to deal with a new family, I'd be a little bit more careful. I still wouldn't be that worried. Now, if I were way out in the wild and around Sasquatches that were less habituated to humans, I do believe these are more habituated to humans simply because what I meant to say, too, earlier is that they have an established recorded history in the area. Three of the families out of the seven I know have an established recorded history in the areas. So that's another thing that validates this. After I told somebody about that, I later heard a story that back in the 1990s, some teenagers went up in the area to a camping site, and they went drinking and, you know, got loud and were hooting and hollering and so on, and something started snapping branches around their campsite, and they got scared and jumped in their trucks to leave, and as they were leaving, something jumped into one of their trucks and started jumping up and down and nearly caused them to wreck.
Oof.
One of the families I found, I was told by two different people who don't know each other, to go and check out the area. In the process of working to try to get this creature protected, even if in the most of minor of ways, simply because they have allowed for hunting a Bigfoot in Oklahoma and Texas, I believe. And, you know, they're saying unharmed, but I just don't think there's any, you know, I don't think there's any humans capable of bringing in a Bigfoot unharmed. It's just not.
Yeah. I wouldn't put money on that either.
You know? And if they can get one, you know, yeah. If they can even back one to begin with. And I don't believe we need to harm these creatures. I believe in building a bond with them over time, and then we may get what we need. They may give us a body. If one human being can just learn to allow them to trust us that much over time. I don't use cameras. I use cameras for tree structures during the day, but I don't use cameras at night. I have set out a trail cam several times, but I would let the creature know, hey, I'm setting the trail cam out here, not like right in their area, but I'm saying I'm going to set it out right here. I'm going to set some food out right here. If you want your picture taken, you have. You know what I got? I got 20 blank pictures is what I got. And one night, I actually set the apples out, and you see the trail cam take a picture of the apples, and then there's one more picture, and the next shot, they're gone, and there's nothing there. It's just like, come on, man. And everybody's like, why don't you set a trail cam up? Why don't you set a trail? This is why. Why don't you set a trail cam up, buddy? Everybody, a lot of critics have a lot of questions, but they're not out in the field doing the work, and they don't know. It's the same for any other profession, you know. I could sit here and armchair quarterback a car mechanic to death, dude, but it doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. You get what I'm saying?
It's just, absolutely. Just in having listened to you, I like your approach to all this and the fact that you're hands off, you're going to let it come to you, and then let them kind of, if they're going to be a part of our world, let them make that decision, not you forcing it on them. So that's the, for me, like, absolutely am fascinated by that approach, because a lot of this, like you said, is in Oklahoma and Texas. I believe it, I wouldn't even call it a reward. It's more like a bounty. And that kind of makes me upset. There's plenty of room for them to exist in this world. We constantly are disrupting everything around us.
Yes.
Your approach is like amazing to me, man. Good on you. Good on you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I'm a conservationist, so I'm somewhere between a tree hugger and a hunter. Like, I understand both sides of things. I understand that certain populations of deer need to be kept in control, or else you're just going to have problems. And it's only because we got too many people, you know, in one area, too. It's not because there's too many deer. It's because there's too many humans, but that's the way it is. And it's the same thing with Sasquatch. Is part of what I want to do, and why I like to do podcasts like this. And by the way, and just to be clear, I make no money off of it. You know, y'all know that. I don't do this for money or attention or anything. That's why I'm using a fake name. I really am just doing this to get information out there that Sasquatches are not necessarily the monsters that we think that they are. It's really a lot of human projection from the subconscious. You know, people can say, well, Sasquatches tear down trees and forests and blah, blah. No, they don't tear down whole forests. They tear down little areas, their little territories. We tear down forests. Humans tear down forests. We burn them down. We tear them down. We destroy everything in our path. That's just what we do. Anything that anybody can say, well, Sasquatches do this or that or blah, 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 I'm going to look at them and say, humans have done worse. I guarantee you. Yeah.
Absolutely. And like with malice in their hearts too.
Yes. Well, if we're supposedly more self-aware than they are, then that counts for a lot more when we do harm to another. Whereas a Sasquatch is part wild. I do believe they're part human. I do follow Dr. Melba Ketchum in Texas. I believe her work is genuine. Even when people try to discount her, she shoots them back down. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's working with some scientists on the DNA genome mapping project.
I apologize. What was her name again?
Dr. Melba Ketchum. Try to have her on your show. She might come on your show. I don't know. She actually did respond to me when I messaged her on Facebook a little bit and basically told me that she's aware of a family near her home, too, and that's how she got the hair, that the creature's living, nothing's dead. And they mapped it out, and they found that it was, I think, a human-ape hybrid. I'm not sure exactly what kind of ape or to what degree, but they did a lot of testing, and they used, I think there were 5 different scientists involved, and there were like 12 different labs. So there was a lot of work involved in this. I believe they are human-ape hybrids. There may be variants in species. I know that Expedition Bigfoot got chimp DNA, I think in Oregon was that? So I don't know how far the species variates. These are only theories and can change in an instant. I believe that they are related to Gigantopithecus, which it'd be like a human Gigantopithecus, which the size would be about right, you know, because Gigantopithecus was, what, 10 to 12 feet tall, roughly? Sasquatches are usually about 6 to 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
I would think if you put, you know, combined a human and a Gigantopithecus DNA or something, that's how somehow it would come out. They do have behavior that's very similar to gorillas and orangutans. They're not really that violent. When you get to know them, they're not really violent at all. Sometimes they do things, like I said, they pushed a tree down one time to let me know that I'd peed in the wrong place. I didn't feel threatened. I stayed. I literally laughed and said, what are you adding on to your house up there? Or they might have been doing it to impress me because I've been playing a little bit of an instrument for them. And that's another thing I wanted to go into is I've been here lately in the last month or so, I've been using music. I was already a musician. I've written over 500 songs. I'm not famous or anything like that. I bought a harmonica to take out in the woods with me because Les Stroud on Survivor Man looked at the camera and said, when I run into black bears, all I do is play this harmonica. And the mother runs off, the cubs go up a tree, and he looked at the camera and goes, every time. I said, okay, that's what I need right there because I don't like weapons. And now I'm back to playing guitar again, which I hadn't picked up in about 4 years now. I'm out playing harmonica and guitar for the Sasquatches. And they seem to get a kick out of it. The harmonica repels other wild animals while it attracts Sasquatches.
It sounds like they tend to enjoy some of these instruments more than others. Man, if you have all those songs, you should put together like a Sasquatch greatest hits. So when you get the best responses from them, and those should be the songs that you choose. And then
release the album. I just do like a mix of folk rock that's like it kind of, you know, like I'll do like kind of a reggae folk rock song or kind of a rockabilly folk rock song or more like a Pearl Jam type folk rock. Well, you know, I just write my own stuff. At home, since I see I have a family that moved here, and that's what I didn't get into, is that I have a family that moved in here near the house on December 20th, which was a winter solstice. It was right around the winter solstice. But that's, they came before then because there was a giant X behind my house, and it's been there since sometime in early November. So I think they were here way before then, and then they ended up letting me know they were here. They're like, okay, we're here, and we're going to start letting you know. And they let me know loudly every night. I would go out in the field and hear knocks and whoops out in the field and come home, and I would be hearing knocks and whoops when I got home and something walking around on this embankment across from my house just all night long. I had a paranormal investigator come out here, somebody I'd already known and had been out with me before to another place. He literally came out here, and he got nervous a couple of times because they weren't real familiar with him. And plus, he's a big guy, 6'6", 330 pounds, so they might have seen him as a possible threat. Although he's really he's just a gentle giant. We felt him come in the backyard. You just feel their energy watching you. You know, anytime they're around you, you can, your hair stands up on end. The more friendly you get with certain ones, the less that happens. And sometimes it's harder to detect when they're around because they're not afraid of you and you're not really as afraid of them. So it's that mutual distrust is not there as much, basically.
Any sort of smells that accompany them, or have you ever been able to sense them from that?
I have only smelled them a few times. I put some peanut butter and apples out back the other night, and I smelled something like a horse back there. I can't say for a fact that it was a Sasquatch, but the details and the way that they leave things after they take the food, like they take all the food, they take the whole peanut butter jar. Often I find the peanut butter jar, and there's no scratches on it or anything like that, which means it's more than likely they unscrewed it, licked it all out, and left it. And they lick it clean is another thing. There's only so many animals that can do that. I know a raccoon can unscrew a peanut butter jar lid, but they can't eat a whole peanut butter jar. They'll get sick about halfway through. Because I know because they've broken into mine, and you can see their claw marks on it and everything, you know. So I've had to learn all the little details. But yeah, I just the other night I set out apples and peanut butters, and it smelled like something like a horse was right behind the house. I got woods behind my house, so I can't really see what's in those woods. Pure darkness, and like I said, I don't use flashlights so that they trust me. A lot of times, I won't know if anything's there or not, and I'll just start talking. Something will respond, maybe something will respond to me, and sometimes it doesn't. But that's the best way to do this, because that's the only way you're going to find out if anything's there, is if you just start talking. And yes, I also want to say that speaking plain English or whatever your native language is, it works. They seem to have some kind of understanding. Plus, if you send mental images, you know, along with that, it does work. The ones, when they moved in here, there's three farms in this area. I live near woods, but there's also, you know, farms. I told the ones here, I sent an image of them with X's over all the animals related to humans. So basically, I was saying, don't eat the cats, the dogs, don't eat any of the cattle, don't eat any human animals, and you'll be fine. You're welcome to any of the wild game around here, which there's plenty of.
And they seem to have respected that so far?
Since December 20th, I hadn't had any problems. I feed them twice a week. I set out about, I don't know, like 18 apples and at least one big jar of peanut butter. In winter, I might feed them every other day or every 3 days when it gets really, really cold. But I kind of do it according to the temperature. And I don't want them to always get on an expected schedule with me. You know, I don't want them to be dependent on me.
Right. I'm not trying to domesticate them. I got you.
No. Yeah. I'm just supplementing a meal for them is all I'm doing. But there's four of them here at the house, and one of them's young, and I believe the mother is pregnant again. And you'd say, well, how do you know that? Well, first of all, you just kind of intuit things like that. The male does communicate with me. The juvenile male, which is about 10 years old, has started coming around to the backyard over here behind my house, whereas the rest of them stay closer to my neighbors. There's another neighbor behind me, so they don't feel real comfortable staying right behind my house. And he has dogs that bark, and that's why. And that's how I'll know sometimes if they're back there behind the house, is that the neighbor's dogs will start barking for no reason, because they only bark when there's something back there. He started coming around back a lot more, and then he went away. I'm just theorizing and intuiting that he's getting pushed out of the nest because he's at that age. And I really could sense, I asked him in my mind, I said, are you male or female? When he was in the backyard, he was only a few feet away from me, and I was talking to him. And sometimes I have to go from mode to mode. I have to switch from talking to him verbally to go to telepathically. Like, oh, wait, that's how you like to talk. Then I'm not hearing him as well. obviously.
And if it varies said, from each one, that which one they prefer, you've noticed, or?
I think they all prefer telepathy, but they realize that it takes humans a while to get to that point. That makes sense. Yep. Plus, you don't get as much evidence with that because you're talking. When you go telepathic, it almost goes quiet between you two. Sometimes they'll whoop or knock after I say something to them telepathically, which is kind of unusual. I mean, the timing's just strange, and that's happened so many times that it's just odd. I'm not going to say that it's, you know, proves anything. I'm just saying it's odd. I did ask the 10-year-old, I said, are you male or female? And I didn't get a response. And I said, can you give birth? And he said, no. I heard a no. And I'm not saying they know the word no, but somehow we're getting communication across. And you also have to understand I'm a witch, so I'll call on other entities to assist me in any of this work that I'm doing. So they may be participating in the communication. One of the entities I call on is actually in the Bible. Well, you can call it Gabriel. I call him Gabriel. So that's one of the four major archangels, and that's one of the, like, I would call on Michael, St. Michael, Archangel Michael, Mikhail for protection. This is the one I would call on for translation and communication. I call on Gabriel, and you can take or leave this part, but I said, how old are you? And he said, 10 years old. He said, 10. And I said, okay, and I take it with a grain of salt. That's what I hear in my head. I have a friend who's a psychic medium. I know a lot of people blow those off, and that's okay, but he's not somebody that does it for a living at all. He's someone who only reads for me, and I don't have to pay him. He's a friend of mine, and he helps me out with a lot of this Sasquatch stuff because there isn't really anybody else to go to with this except for other researchers. Because primatologists, I've tried. They don't want to discuss it for the most part. They really don't. And then when you get primatologists that are actually into Sasquatching, they don't want to tell you what they know a lot of times. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, everyone wants to be first, right? Yeah.
I guess that too. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't tell my friend anything. I just said, I think I got another Sasquatch around behind the house. Can you tell me a little bit about him? I said, can you give me a reading? And usually my friend actually takes a day to do a reading. Like he'll say, he'll have to go meditate and then get back to me. And immediately he goes, no, you got a 10-year-old juvenile behind your house. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, there you go. You know, and that, I mean, that may not be validation for other people, but that's about as much validation as I'm going to get in this kind of situation.
So do you think that it was communicated to him? Because if you think about it, the concept of years, when the juvenile communicated with you that, yes, I am 10 years old, is there a possibility that he was giving it to you in terms you could understand versus, you know, to them, what's a year? You know what I mean? Like
Exactly. No, I totally understand what you're saying. And I want to be clear that I don't, when I go out there and talk to him, I don't expect him to understand everything I'm saying. I go on the knowledge that Coco the gorilla learned to understand, I think, what was it, over 2,000 English words? But, you know, even dogs and cats learn certain words. I mean, you say, you know, dinner time, they come running.
Right, right.
Certainly dogs do, and they seem to understand their name. And science has proven that dogs understand certain words, and I think cats do, too. I think it's really easy for them to understand things. Another thing is I think this family was already habituated to humans, which is why they so easily came to me. So the father or the mother in the family might have already grown up around humans, if that makes any sense. So they might have already been somewhat habituated to them and habituated to their understandings and ways of life, somewhat. I'm not saying that, you know, someone taught them the years and the dates and stuff, but I actually try to do that. I try to teach them things about calendars. And when I say 3 or 4 days, I'll say 3 or 4 suns from now, something like that, in ways they might can understand it.
Now, do you feel that they possibly are related to us at all or completely different?
I definitely feel like they're related to us. I feel like they're related to us in as much as chimps or gorillas or so on are related to us. But I think they're more self-aware so they can connect with us more, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think they can understand more words, understand more behavior.
Do they strike you as being a lot less active during the winter, possibly like hibernating, or do they just active?
No, actually, I didn't get to what I was going to say, but the 6'6", 330-pound paranormal investigator that came over here and set his boom mic up here, right before he left, he said, I've never heard so much Sasquatch activity in my life, and that was in winter.
Okay.
You could just hear them moving all over the embankment over there. Another thing I wanted to get into is their invisibility. I think the male was, at that time, going back to that, I think at that time the male was constantly hunting, trying to find something to eat for his family. And at the same time, he was worried about me and trying to make sure that I wasn't ever going to be a problem for him because he had already let me know that he was there. He was learning to trust me, too. At the same time, he was just trying to survive. I want to say very clearly that I think that Sasquatch dads and probably my, and moms too, I'm sure, are awesome parents. I mean, they are incredibly dedicated. They stay so close to their family. They don't let danger get close. They don't. That's why maybe people have so many negative experiences with them, is because maybe you're too little too close to their family and you don't know it. And they're just reacting. If you think about you and your own family and some other species of animal comes around and you don't know what to expect from it, then how are you going to react? You know, you
probably
might react
violently to protect them.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Or in some protective way, to show a show of force, you know, pull up in a big truck or you got a Humvee or whatever. So a lot of the things that they do, we don't think about. But Sasquatches, if they're part human, then they're going to be a lot like us. And we need to start looking and studying our own nature to better understand them and that of known primates, I think. Yeah, my friend said he'd never heard so much Sasquatch activity in his life. That thing was just, it seemed like the dad was just walking up and down all night. When I go back and listen to it, I guess it's because I'm used to hearing it. And other people have, you know, told me they could hear it just fine. When I shared it in a Bigfoot group on Facebook, I didn't seem to have any problems. Everybody seemed to be able to hear it. But I do tell people to listen to it on a loudspeaker. And, yeah, you do have creeks running around. But one of the things about Sasquatches I've noticed is that if they have creeks or something to cover their noises, then they're going to be louder and you're going to get more evidence. But you got to get past the creek. That's the whole thing. And I've also learned that they make their sounds to sound like the sounds of the woods in nature. One thing I did want to throw out there, and this is my theory, I haven't heard anybody else say this. I think a lot of the X's they build, if you notice, not every time, but a lot of the time, a lot of the structures they build are facing east. I think they could be used as calendars. Because if you think of Stonehenge and the sun coming up between two pillars, and you think of an X and the sun coming up between two points, you know, they may move into an area. So, yeah, X's could be used to tell other Sasquatches, hey, that's what a lot of people think. That's the known, you know, the belief theory, accepted theory. They're boundary markers for other Sasquatches, and they could be that. They could work as that. But they could also be, a lot of these structures could be calendars. They're marking
points. Or even like a sundial kind of deal. Maybe not that specialized, but, yeah, no, dude, that's great.
Well, the X behind my house is large enough, and I noticed the sun and the moon come up within it. It's large enough that it could predict the whole year, season.
Fascinating stuff. Normally, I talk a lot, but I was just so enamored with what you were saying that I just was like, no, I need to just shut up and listen, because it was great, man. But in the future, John, would you be interested in joining us again?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll come back on repeatedly and see about new things happening, or maybe, you know, if I figure out anything new.
All right, so that was John Doe joining us from North Carolina out in the Appalachian Mountains and with his families of Sasquatch. He's going to go ahead and do his thing. I really, like I said, I appreciate the way that you're going about it, man. Definitely seems like the right approach. And, you know, we'll invite you on again. Love to hear more about it, more about the families. But I definitely am rating this innocent. And you convinced me 100%. Like,
I tell you what.
I'm on board. I want to hear more.
Anybody, if they wanted to, they could put those lie detector, those voice analysis, digital voice analysis, you could do that to me. And you could tell I'm telling you life as I perceive it. That's it. It's just, this is my reality. It's my reality day and night. I go out in the field, I do this, I come home and I do this. This is just what I do. And I don't claim to know everything, I'm learning. And I'm always going to be learning. Wow. I'm never going to be an expert, because they know more. They'll always know more than I do. The Sasquatch is the experts. We're always the students. You know. But anyway, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll have John on again. All right. Take us out.